Charting Toward Intimacy covers mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy,
where we're expanding the conversation around Catholic sexuality.
We're your hosts, Ellen and Kathleen.
Before we jump into this week's episode, I have a special announcement for you. Kathleen and I are starting an exclusive online community for our biggest fans in just a few short weeks. In the community, you will get the full video recording of each podcast episode, as well as monthly live Q&A sessions with me, Ellen, plus some other fun bonuses. We're launching this in just a few weeks, so we wanted to offer a pre-sale deal for those of you who are ready to jump in now. Normally, it'll be $5 a month to be part of the community, but here's our pre-sale deal. For $15 today, you'll get access to the community for 6 months once we launch it. That's half price. We're launching this community for a few reasons. First off, as the podcast has grown, we've realized how hard it is to connect with our listeners on a personal level. We want to have conversations with you, and this community is a place where we can connect and have those conversations on a deeper level with you, our listeners. Also, being a part of the community helps to support the ongoing costs of this podcast so we can continue to create quality content for you. Click the link in the show notes to get the pre-sale deal of 6 months for the price of 3. Welcome to this week's episode. This is a super special episode. We actually have a guest. This is the first time that we have had a guest since Kathleen has officially joined as co-host. So, of course, we had some technical difficulties, but we made it work. We got our recording. Thank you, Lord. Before we jump in, this month, May, is for our mother. We honor Mary during the month of May. And Kathleen and I have just been reflecting on the fact that there is a lot to pray for when it comes to, you know, NFP and marriage and all sorts of things. So we have different prayer intentions. Each week of the month of May, we're going to be sharing them on the podcast before the episode starts. And we're going to ask you guys, our listeners, to offer something for this intention. And we're going to be putting together a spiritual bouquet for our Mother Mary. And so whether that's a rosary or bringing the intention to Mass, or maybe you say a handful of Hail Marys and some Our Fathers, really whatever it is that you want to bring to the spiritual bouquet, we ask you to share that with us. Share it on Instagram, email us, whatever you'd like to do to let us know. And we're going to compile our spiritual bouquet and share that on Instagram with everybody at the end of the month. So this week's intention is for married couples. We pray for an overall embracing of marriage vows and an increase of the gift of self between spouses. And we especially pray for those couples who struggle with periodic abstinence and NFP. Okay, so this week's guest, I want to also give you a bio of our guest before we jump in to the conversation. So Sister Carolyn Nunes is our guest this week. She entered the Sisters of St. Francis of the Martyr St. George in 2005. She's a native of Rhode Island, and she's a graduate of Franciscan University of Steubenville, having received a bachelor's degree in theology with a concentration in religious education, and then a master's in catechetics and evangelization. Over the past 20 years, she has worked in the field of catechetics and youth ministry in parishes and schools in Tennessee, Illinois, New Jersey, Kansas, and Missouri. Nothing brings her more joy than to share the fullness of life and the merciful love of Christ with others and to help them find the same in God's incredible plan for their lives, which is her current apostolate as vocation director for her community. As a part of her work as vocation director, she's often invited as a speaker for days of recollection, retreats, and events for youth and adults alike. She enjoys painting and other arts and crafts and making music on the guitar, harmonica, ukulele, and as a human jukebox with a song always on her heart. And I also recently just got a message from a listener that apparently Sister Carolyn is incredible on the harmonica. So, you know, maybe next time we have her on the podcast, we'll have to have her record some harmonica. All right. With that, let's jump into the episode.
All right. We are back with another Charting Toward Intimacy episode. And this is a really special episode. So we have Kathleen here as always, but we also have Sister Carolyn here. Welcome, sister.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here, finally.
Oh, my gosh. So I met Sister Carolyn, what, 9 months ago, maybe more than 9 months ago, at the Summer Given Institutes Forum. And Sister Carolyn and I, you might be wondering, like, why do we have a nun on the podcast? What are you doing?
Talking about sexuality in NFP. Yeah. What?
Hey. This is like the last person.
Everybody charts, you know what I'm saying?
Right?
It's exactly right.
That's a whole nother topic to do an episode about, is everybody charts. But we're gonna go even deeper than everybody charts. So Sister Carolyn and I met at this Given Forum, and I told her about my podcast and I told her about the things I was passionate about. And she and I were talking about how really a lot of pain is caused when, like, women and men enter into marriage with, like, issues and baggage around sexuality. And then Sister Carolyn said something to me that just, like, opened my eyes to something I had never thought about, but made so much sense, is that she, as the vocations director of her community, has to ensure that the reason that women wanting to join the community, their reasoning isn't because they have sexual baggage or issues around sexuality. So, sister, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So all of us live in this world which is tainted by sin and tainted by a lot of lies and saturation of sexuality and in ways that are not helpful and that are not authentically true, beautiful, and good. So, like, I went to public school for 13 years and grew up on the East Coast. I learned a lot of things I probably shouldn't have learned, you know? this goes both ways. This is either, like, I don't know as much as I need to know, or I know more than I should know. And how does it come together in a healthy and integrated sexuality of an authentic appreciation of femininity, an authentic appreciation of capacity to give life and to receive life? The desire to be bride in whatever shape that's going to take form, that bridal desire and that bridal gift has to be a gift that's made in freedom, not out of fear. Either way, right? So entering into marriage, if you're afraid of what that gift looks like, that's problematic. But if you're entering into religious life, or you desire to enter into religious life as a means of escaping or running away from that capacity to give and receive life, then that's problematic as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I feel like I see this come up, like, with people that are already married, and they kind of retroactively look back and say, wow, I entered into this marriage, like, with the wrong mindset about unity and sexuality and, you know, gift giving and things like that. So, I mean, I feel like it's actually fairly common in marriages to see this. Would you say that this is a common issue that comes up as you're, you know, talking with women interested in joining?
I think definitely in discernment, in the conversations that I have with women, usually these are not the conversations we have the first day, but they're conversations that come up as I'm accompanying them. And
what you, that's not the first question you ask.
Yeah,
asked,
you know,
sister.
It's not. I feel like maybe I should ask where they're from first, you know?
You know, maybe.
But there is something to be said for, like, these conversations are so important. And my goal as a vocation director is to accompany a woman to a point where she feels free enough to share with me without my need to ask. Like, I do need to ask, but my goal is that, like, if it comes to it and a woman desires to ask for an application to the community, and I sit down and ask what I call the super personal questions that I don't ask until you're right about ready to ask for an application. Anyway.
Well, that name just rolls off
just
the tongue.
Just rolled right off the tongue, those. Yeah.
Do you have that list? Like, is that printed out?
I do.
Is that something you have on your desk?
I do print it out. And there are things that have been added to it over the past couple of years. I sat down with a priest friend who is a psychologist as well, and he said, you know, you really need to ask women about, like, how many images of you are out there, and that, like, you know, what's your social media, and, like, what's your, like, have you sent images of yourself, like, you know, like, sexting and stuff like that. Like, that stuff, you need to know that. And, like, was it with Maya? Yeah. Or was it when you were a minor? Or, like, all those kinds of things. I was like, that was not on my radar. Even though I went to public school and grew up on the East Coast, like, those were not things that I was thinking about. So anyway, I think the original question you asked was, like, how do we start having these conversations? First of all, there's a growth in trust, for a woman to be able to reveal her heart and to share, like, hey, these are some of the wounds that I have. These are some of the experiences that I've had. And to not be afraid of those things, and for me to not be afraid of those things. And that takes work on my part as well. And it's taken some retroactive healing and and kind of growth on my part to be able to receive other women in their stories, knowing that some of that stuff's going to touch my own story too.
Mm, yeah. Wow. I just want to sit with that for a second.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was...
Because, you know, what Kathleen and I do is every week we get to sit down and talk about some issue around NFP or sexuality or theology or marriage or something like that. And, you know, we share our advice and we share all this. But I think it's so important to remember that, you know, sharing this stuff, it has to come from a place of healing.
Yes.
First.
Right.
And so, you know, as you're chatting with women who are... Well, I mean, you're doing more than chatting. You're having a deep conversation at that point.
We get there, you're right.
As you're talking with... Yeah, it's not. That's not a casual coffee chat. But, you know, your conversation has to come from a place of healing, that this is work that you have done and are still doing. You know, we've never arrived or anything like that. And I think Kathleen and I say that on the podcast a lot. Like, the last couple of episodes that we recorded were kind of out of our... comfort zone of, these are things we are not done with,
but yeah, we're still healing.
Started.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have started.
And this is my seventh year as vocation director. So I've seen a thing or two at this point. And I remember my first year when I started, one of the sisters said to me, you know, you're vocation director for you, right? And I was like, oh, but I mean, like, I've made final vows and I know that this is what I'm all about. And I, you know, and then like within a month, I was like, oh, Jesus, you want to talk about that one thing? You want to talk about that little wound? Oh, I thought
you want to pull that one out right now?
Didn't we just do that? Like, are we? Oh, you want to do more with that? And thanks be to God. Like, thanks be to God that things kind of started to come to the surface at that point in my first year as vocation director, because that just sent me on this path of intense spiritual direction and a little bit of time in therapy and being able to integrate some of that, so that now when women bring things to the surface, I'm like, cool, great, I love it. Like, I'm not afraid of that, because I'm no longer afraid of my own stuff that I didn't even realize I was still kind of afraid of. And I just think in general, really, right, amazing. Now, like, thanks be to God, right now, religious life in the United States and communities in the United States are starting to realize, like, hey, we need to address these things. We can't just pretend they don't exist. And I think there has been a perception of, like, religious communities that tend to be a little bit more faithful to the church, like, that, oh, we have all of our stuff together, and that's so dangerous. Mm. And the work of Dr. Bob Schutz and the JP2 Healing Center and a lot of that stuff is kind of finally making its way into religious communities. They're developing a retreat specifically for religious women. And our own community just recently was able to experience a Healing the Whole Person retreat. Every single sister, from the youngest postulant to the oldest sister in the infirmary, had Sister Miriam and Father John Burns here for 4.5 days. Like, what? Okay, cool.
Oh my gosh.
That's fabulous.
That's amazing.
I, like, really beautifully set a lot of sisters in this space where there was freedom to address brokenness in general. But I think for a number of us, there were some areas of sexual brokenness that came to the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really cool thing. And honestly, something that I'm just learning right now, I'm honestly reading a book on parenting right now. Because my kids are getting older. My oldest is almost 10, and then I have an 8-year-old, and you know, they follow from there. But I'm realizing that as they get
every
older,
2 years, right?
Yeah, every 2 years about from there. But I'm realizing that as they get older, their needs are changing, and I'm struggling to sort of figure out this new way of parenting, right? Like, it's like, I can handle the babies like with my eyes closed at this point, but as they're getting older, it's like totally different. And I'm reading this book right now that's basically telling me, in regards to discipline, like, you cannot discipline your children until you've disciplined yourself. And when I really sat with that and was like thinking about it, it was just like, wow, I am like very undisciplined. Like, I mean, really, like, all these things that I'm trying to pass on and teach my kids and I get so frustrated with, it's like, okay, but hello, beam in the eye, girlfriend, like, do you, right? Like, it's like, you can't even do that yourself. So how do you think you're going to teach it to your kids, you know? And I think that's exactly sort of what you were saying, sister, that with this particular, with these wounds and everything, right? Like, we can't really help other women deal with these things until we've started dealing with them ourselves. So I think, and it's cool to see that sort of in every aspect, right? Like I'm talking about it in parenting, but you're talking about it in, you know, terms of like sexuality and maybe sexual wounds, you know, dealing with that as they enter the religious life. It's just like kind of a lesson that we can apply, I think, all across life, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think one of the first questions that we have as women is, am I worthy of love, right? So like to be able to answer that question independently of a dating relationship, but also independently of like being chosen, like being deemed worthy enough to enter a community, right? Like, do I know myself to be worthy of love is like such a central question. I had an experience at the Sikh conference this year, actually talking to a seminarian, and he's a spiritual son of mine. And he approached me and asked me, you know, he was struggling because he was attracted to this girl. And I'm like, good, this is really good news. Like, I'm so glad that you're attracted to this woman, you know? And I knew, and
like, that's what we want.
And he was like telling me about, like,
you're a man.
And I knew who it was. And so I was like, hey, can I just name her right now? Cause it's going to be a little bit easier if we can just call her by name. And as soon as I like said who it was, he's like, how did you know that? And I was like, don't ask questions. Let's just sit with her for a second, you know? I was like, no, of course you're attracted to her. You should be, like, she's amazing, you know? Anyway, but we had a beautiful time, and I was just coming off this retreat with Father John and Sister Miriam, and just kind of like felt moved to pray with him. And so we're praying, and I just asked him a very simple question. I said, do you not believe that you're worthy to be someone's husband? And he just lost it. And it was such a powerful moment of like piercing through that lie. And I think for women, that's a question. Like, maybe I'm not worthy to be someone's wife, so I'll just go to the convent, right? Like, I'll just go hide out there because I'm not worthy to be someone's wife. But like, if you don't know yourself worthy to be a bride of a man, it's going to be even harder to know yourself to be worthy as a bride of Christ. And that was my summer of preparation for final vows, was kind of grappling with that. Like, Jesus, you know what you're getting here. Like, here's the stuff. And like, you know all of that. And you got, you know, a couple more months to kick me out if this isn't going to work out, you know? And lo and behold, he didn't. And so here we are, right?
Wow.
But it was specifically, I recognized that even the title Bride of Christ made me uncomfortable. And I had to like sit with that and sort through, why is it? Like, why do I feel icky when people are like, your final vow day is like your wedding day? And I was like, ew, stop. Like, that's, I don't like that. You know, it was like, oh, I probably need to pray into this a little bit. And what I realized was that I struggled with the receptive nature of bridal identity. Like, giving, bring it on. Like, I'm all about, I'm going to pour myself out. I'm going to give myself all the things. Absolutely, right? But the receptive nature of the bridal identity was so problematic for me. And then I traced it backwards and I was like, oh, the receptive nature of the daughter identity is also problematic for me. Oh, receptivity is just problematic for me. Oh, all right. So my prayer that summer was, Jesus, show me the Father. Jesus, show me the Father. Jesus, if you could you just show me the Father? Hey, like, it'd be really great, Jesus, if you could show me the Father before I walk down the aisle and say forever. Like, that'd be really great. And he came through like about 2 weeks before.
Yeah, right? And it's always like right in clutch, you know? It's not...
Came in hot right before I started my silent retreat. And then on my silent retreat, because I was like, all right, I think the daughter thing is kind of coming healed, like in this space here. But like the bride thing, Jesus, I'm still a little bit like, oh. And there was a particular dating relationship that I had where a guy broke up with me, and he literally said in the breakup conversation, I'm just not attracted to you as husband and wife. And I realized that was a wound that I was carrying with me. And though I had forgiven him, and though we had like actually maintained a friendship somewhat after that, like, there was still a lot there. And so my prayer going into my silent retreat was like, all right, Lord, you got literally 10 days before I'm going to walk down the aisle. So could we take care of this? And he, again, came in clutch 3 days beforehand, Feast of St. Clair, which is my patron saint. I was like, okay, all right. And what he showed me was that night of the breakup, he was sitting behind me. And I could never see him because he was behind me. But what that guy did, because he left crying that night, and I was like, dude, you just broke up with me. Why are you crying? Okay.
I should be the one crying.
Yeah, seriously. Like, you don't have a right to tears right now. Like,
right. You have my heart.
but what the Lord showed me was that the reason that he left crying that night was that he gave me away because he knew it would never be enough for me. And it's true. And the way that his life has turned out, God bless him, and Lord have mercy on a lot of the decisions that he's made since then. But like, what I experienced as rejection was actually protection. And for years, what I carried around as this wound of rejection was actually like such a wound, such a gift of chosenness and of preference, of Jesus saying like, no, I don't want you to be hurt, because if this relationship goes the way that you want it to go, you will end up much more hurt than this is going to hurt. Like, this hurts you more than it's going to hurt you. It hurts me more than it hurts you, kind of thing. Like, thanks be to God. Yeah. I experienced that pain because it preserved me from a much greater pain.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
That's powerful.
So, sister, you kind of shared a little bit of like your own healing journey. And I know that's not everything, right? You just shared little bits and pieces. I think we all have little stories like that and bigger stories like that of different healing. So when you meet with a woman who she does offer up, like there is some sort of issue or baggage or something that does need healing, how do you encourage healing in this particular space?
Sure. So it's twofold. Like I'm a better living through therapy kind of person. I don't think you need it all the time in your life, but I think that everyone should go at some point in their life, because we've all got stuff. So being able to step into that arena, especially with a Catholic therapist who has that anthropological worldview and like that Christian anthropology to enter into this. And we do. I mean, there are so many resources that are out there at this point in terms of reading material or like something like a JP2 Healing Center retreat, where there really is a thrust, especially on sexual healing. I know that they just published a book last year called, I think it was Be Restored. And it was, the entire book is about sexual healing, and not just sexuality wounds in terms of I did this or this happened to me, but even just like, oh, I don't know what it means to be a woman. I was talking to a young lady who, in reading and praying through the content of that book, realized that she had never seen her mom in a dress, and that profoundly impacted the way that she saw herself as a woman, because she had never seen her mom like live that kind of external femininity, in a sense, you know, not to reduce our sexuality to the externals by any stretch of the imagination, but that does have an effect. Yeah. If your mom is the one who's always taking control, and if you go to Thanksgiving dinner and every woman in the family is the one who's domineering everything, and there's no sense of receptivity, then your own understanding of receptivity is going to be skewed. So I know that was a really helpful resource for her. So kind of pointing people in the direction of good resources, but really receiving the story in and of itself, I think, is the first step in healing. Like, for someone to have the courage to say, hey, this is my story, this is where I struggle, it just takes the power out of any space where the enemy can lurk. I sat with a woman last year. This was one of my favorite moments of a healing conversation ever. And she reached out to me and she's like, hey, can we get together? I kind of have something I need to talk about. And her confessor actually said, hey, you need to bring this into light with a woman specifically, and a woman that you trust. So she reached out to me. We met up at a park, and she brought coffee, and she, you know, we're sitting there. It was this beautiful day, and we're drinking our coffee, and she shares with me her struggle with sexual addiction. And as she's sharing that story, and it was Easter week, so there's just a sense of like Jesus winning victory in this woman's courage of like saying this out loud. As she's saying this out loud, in the background, somewhere behind me, a woman decides that it's the perfect time to start singing "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning" at the top of her lungs in an operatic voice. And I'm like receiving this woman's very profound, intimate, like spilling all of her guts, trying not to laugh because this is just happening behind me. I'm like, what do I do? She finished and I thanked her for her vulnerability. And then I was like, can we also just both pause and laugh together about this situation, right? Like, this is so Jesus singing. Like, it's like, it's Jesus laughing with us and singing over you. Like, what a beautiful morning that you have now felt the freedom to say these things out loud for the first time, right? Like, outside of confession, like to really like bring that to him and to live in a new kind of freedom. Because ultimately that's what we need, right? Like, to enter into any kind of forever yes, what is needed is freedom. And so where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And the more freedom that we can offer each other in this journey, then the better off everyone's going to be. Because that's where love moves to, right?
Right, right. Absolutely. And I'm just imagining somebody listening, because most of our listeners are married, you know, they're not discerning religious life. You know, we do have some engaged women who are listening, engaged couples that are listening, but the majority of our listeners are married. And, you know, it might kind of feel like, oh, well, I've already like made this forever yes. Like, I've already, you know, I can't go back and like heal myself beforehand. But I just want to give you listening just some consolation that like, it is never too late to heal. Jesus is always waiting for you. He's always ready. He's always there. He wants to give you that, oh, what a beautiful morning moment with a girlfriend of yours in a park.
He does. And that's the beautiful thing, too. Like, healing, first of all, we're never going to heal ourselves. Like, it really is exposing everything to the divine physician and knowing that he's already there and he's never left that place. And it's a place where oftentimes in a space of wounding, we kind of get hung up there. And there's like a stunting of growth that happens there. And we're a scared little girl in that space. And Jesus wants to come and love us in that space, to love us into the maturity of being confident women. A great book on Father Wilfred Stinnison wrote this book called Into Your Hands, Father. And it's probably one of the best spiritual books I've read in the last 10 years. First of all, because it's only like 100 pages and I can totally get behind that. But second of all,
yes. I love that.
Yeah, it's like a Jack Link size and you're like, yes, every single page.
Yes. For days,
Many Jack Philippe books.
Yeah, Jack Philippe is amazing.
They're so short.
Okay, we'll start getting on the Father Wilfred Stinnison kick because it's like same idea. But this particular book really is about God's providence and the fact that we're never alone. And that whenever we recognize that we're not alone, and whenever we recognize, especially in spaces of wounding and difficulty, that we're not alone, and that the Father loves us, and that he was there, and he didn't will it, but he allowed it, and like his allowing it is so that he can give us a greater gift there. He's just waiting for us to ask, like, Lord, show me the gift you're giving me here, and how do you want to heal, to love me into a deeper healing, into a deeper maturity, into a deeper freedom?
Yeah.
So I have a question, sister. When women come to you, and you realize, there is some healing behind sexuality that needs to happen before she can enter the religious life, where do you recommend they start with that?
Like spiritual direction and like, okay, like level of freedom. Yeah. Is this sexual addiction experience? Is that something you're still dealing with? Is it something you did deal with? Like what's the frequency that you're struggling here? Has there been trauma? And like, if there has been trauma, that's not an obstacle altogether, but how has that trauma been addressed? Have you already been to counseling? Do you need to continue to go to counseling frequently? Or is this something that, you went for 6 months, you received some tools, you know how to work those tools when things come up. So kind of like, it's going to be different for every single woman. There's no cookie cutter approach. Sure. And I think doing vocation work with a cookie cutter approach is really damaging in a lot of ways. It has to be so personal because God's call is personal and each person's story is so deeply personal. And so, just like if we're not, as religious communities, if we're not willing to walk that personal route, shame on us, because there really does need to be that particular accompaniment in whatever each person's circumstance is. You know, it's not like, okay, like here's the folder, and when someone brings this up, I'm just going to say, these are the things you do, check, check, check. Because it's like, no, what's going to be best for you? Because maybe going to therapy right now is not going to be helpful because you need to be at a different place in order to start that, so it's going to be more effective. Like maybe a weekend retreat is going to be what's best for you versus like ongoing. Maybe this book is just going to help a lot, or maybe you have a great spiritual director who's not afraid of this stuff and is willing to walk with you in it.
Right. I think all of us, we learn in different ways. We experience things in different ways. We experience learning and healing in different ways. And so, it's so important to be like one-on-one, when it comes to issues like this. And this is where, I mean, Kathleen and I have a lot of issues with marriage prep in the church today. But one of those issues is that the vast majority of programs are the same weekend retreat for everybody. And there isn't this this personalization of the marriage preparation process, because for some couples, they might need to, they truly might need to really dig into financial problems. Like that might need to be healed before they get married. Right. Whereas another couple really needs to like recognize the meaning behind Christian marriage and like what it actually means to have an indelible mark on your soul, when you say your wedding vows, and what the meaning of sex is in marriage, and those kind of things. Right. But every couple and every individual too is coming to the table needing different things. So one of the things also that's really lacking in marriage prep is this aspect of ensuring that the healing process has begun for sexual issues, baggage, sexuality, addictions, things like that. It's not addressed. I mean, Kathleen had a rant to me last week about how she was invited to come speak at a marriage preparation retreat about parenting and natural family planning. And she was given an hour to speak, have small group time, and individual individual reflection. Like, an hour. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And so, you know, that's just natural family planning and parenting. That's not even sexuality and the meaning of sex and the healing that needs to happen. So all that to say, do you think that there is a way to integrate, or, I mean, your answer to that would be yes, but how do you think that, like, marriage prep programs or people who work in marriage prep could integrate what you do with women discerning religious life into marriage preparation programs to, you know, ensure that like sexual issues are at least being addressed? You know, they're not going to be fully healed. They're never going to be fully healed. But at least that the concept is being brought up.
Sure. I think you nailed it, right? It's not about programs. It's about personal. And so I think the most successful marriage prep setups that I've seen have been situations where there's like teaching couples, and not just like teaching couples for NFP, but teaching couples for like, all right, we've got this young couple, they're seniors in college, they're going to get married right out of college, sitting down with a couple that's been married for 30 years, you know, and that's had their struggles. Because that's the thing too, is like, I think people think that the yes is for the beautiful day with the wedding dress and the flowers, but like really, the promises that we make, whether it's on final vow day or whether it's at the altar for marriage, right? The yes is for the hard stuff more than it's for the good stuff. And it's the vows that keep us stable in that space of love. So for a couple that's been married for 30 years and probably has had to grapple with some of these things that have come up in their marriage, to be able to accompany a younger couple that's just getting started and even into marriage, like who says that marriage prep is just like so you can get ready so you can check the box and sign the paper and say you did what you're supposed to do according to the diocese? Like, why isn't it like, hey, young couples in the parish have an older mentor couple to live life together? I was in a parish where they had this thing called Dinner for Eight, and it was a great opportunity for a few older couples to get together with a few younger couples, and they just met in someone's house once a month and had a meal together. And that was a great opportunity for just growing and fellowship, you know, and just communion, but really mentorship. And that's the key. Mentorship is the key, right? This is like, that's what our formation program is. It's really in some sense a mentorship and continual growth. And I think about our sisters in temporary vows, like they've made vows, they haven't said forever just yet, like the mentorship that has to take place. So when stuff does come up, like, hey, you didn't make a mistake. Like it's okay. Like, you know, the tragedy when marriages end in divorce, or the tragedy when a woman walks away from her vocation after 30 years or something like that. It's like, okay, something came up and that, like, you couldn't handle it, but you actually could handle it with the Lord, or if you let him handle it. So let's not be afraid when stuff comes up. So I think mentorship leading up to and through the initial parts of marriage. There's a diocese that I know that has their young clergy, the priests that have been ordained less than 10 years. They get together every year for a week in the summer for continual formation with the young clergy.
Love it.
And they have some of the older guys coming and walking with them during that time. That's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love programs like Witness to Love because they have it's the marriage preparation program is that the engaged couple goes into their own parish and finds a mentor couple. And then that mentor couple, they walk together for the 6 months of formation that is the Witness to Love marriage prep program. Like, programs like that, I think are really, they're getting there, right? Yeah. They're getting at the heart of what we really need is, you know, we need that, like when you're in a community, in the religious life, like you have your mentors all around you, like they're right there. You all live together, right? That's not the case for marriage life. Our mentors do not live with us. We live by ourselves. That's kind of the point. You know, maybe a parent lives, but you know, that's not as common in the United States. It's not as common just in this day and age. And so we need to actually, those of us who are married need to actually seek out those mentorship, places. And I recently had a conversation, with, amazing mom friend of mine, and she told me, as far as being a mother, that I need to find three different mom friends. Well, I have to have more than that, but she was like, you have to have these three types of friends. You need to have a mom friend who is ahead of you, so somebody who has older kids. You need to find a mom friend who's roughly in the same spot as you, and you need to find a mom friend who's behind you. Not like they're a lesser mom, but like someone who has younger kids right. than you. And I thought that was brilliant. And I think also in marriage, we need to have that. We need to have a couple friend who is ahead of us, who's been married for at least 5 more years than us, but probably more like 10 more years than us. We need to find, you know, I think a lot of us have friends that are like married in the same age range as us, because those are, you know, we kind of connect with those people easily. But then we also need to find some friends who are, you know, not married yet or younger married than us. That might be a little bit harder for those of us who, you know, I've only been married for 5 years, right? So it's like, well, I could find a newly married couple, but that's not that much of a difference. But again, as we get older into it and deeper into marriage, like those can be easier to find. But I love that idea of sort of this mentorship, but then also we're always journeying with the others around us too. And we can then become mentors to those who are a couple steps behind us in the journey and help them come along.
You just gave the brick talk, Ellen. I love that. I share about this often because I think this is just important in general. Like, yes, in the context of marriage, for sure, but just in context of our humanity, right? Like, I need to have co-sisters next to me that are my peers. There's days where they're stronger, where I'm stronger, but we're holding each other in the wall. I need to have bricks that are below me that are holding me up and that don't need anything from me in return. Like, they are emotionally and spiritually supporting me, and they don't need me to do the same thing for them. But then I also need to have bricks above me that I am holding up and that I'm not relying on them for my emotional needs to be met, but I'm just pouring myself out. And so having people in those places and the right people in those places, I think, is the key to thriving humanity in a very real way. Something else just on mentor couples. I'm just going to throw this out here. I know that for me, I needed to see a couple that lived marriage the way that I desired to live marriage. I needed to see a couple that was living their faith well, that was raising their children, maybe a little bit differently than I was raised. My parents were great. They did the best with what they had to work with. But there was nothing about their love that I was ever like, I'm just so inspired by the way that they're so in love with each other. I didn't really see that. So I needed to find a couple that whose love did inspire me and who was raising their kids in a way that I desired to raise children, so that I could look to that and say, okay, I do desire that. Like, I'm not running away from something. I know what it could look like in a beautiful way. And so I know that could be a viable possibility. And I think that's what, it's just kind of statistically speaking, women discerning religious life, a lot of them are coming from families of divorce. And so there's a lot of brokenness that's there too. So to make sure that this is not a running away because, oh, mom and dad didn't work out, so I probably could never make it work out, so I'll just go into the convent. So no, you need to know the beauty of marriage in order to be free to enter. I'm going to throw it out there. I think that married women who are convinced they're called to marriage also need to know the beauty of religious life too. And to not just discern the beauty of one and the crosses and the difficulties and challenges of the other. Cause I think sometimes that happens, like, oh my gosh, you just get to pray all the time. And I'm like, yeah. And I live with sisters who really annoy me sometimes, right? Like, so you can't just like think about.
Sister, I am so guilty of like being in the midst of toddler tantrums and being like, oh, being in a convent must be so nice. All you do is pray all day long.
Yeah. So like discerning marriage, thinking about the wedding day, but then like discerning religious, like thinking about how you don't get to see your family. Like, no. Like let's get the reality. Cause you know what? If you're married, you might not get to see your family either. And that's something I hold. I'm like, you know what? If you were married and lived halfway across the country from your family, cause you were living closer to your husband's family, you might not get to see your family on every holiday. So this is just the vocations are less different than they are alike. I'm convinced either way, bride and mother. Right. Either way, it's bride and mother. Either way, it's love. Either way, it's the cross. Either way, it's conversion. But what's it going to look like in my own heart, in your own heart? How is that going to be played out? How's the mystery of brideship and motherhood going to be played out in the heart of every woman?
Yes. Oh,
that's beautiful.
Just sit with that question.
Yeah.
I run a women's discernment group in the Archdiocese of St. Louis, and one of the things we do, one of the weeks is called Paths of Love. and I bring in a mom, and we talk about kind of our own stories, and then we talk about 1 Corinthians 13, and what does it look like to grow in love that is patient and kind and gentle and all the things in our respective vocations, and how have we grown in our brideship and our maternity through our respective vocations, so that the women can see, like, this is not as different as you think it is. Like, yeah, you think, oh gosh, I can never enter the convent because you pray morning prayer at 5:05. Yeah, and you're going to be feeding a baby at 5:05, if not earlier, and if not every hour on the hour through the night. So
you might also be recording a podcast with a defiant three-year-old who refuses to stay upstairs. So, you know. You could be doing all sorts of patience, kindness. We're practicing right now. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I love – I don't know who – I don't know where I heard this. I don't know. It's around, but just the liturgy of hours of motherhood, right? It's the 3 a.m. diaper change and the 6:30 a.m. wake up and the, you know, 10 o'clock snack and the 11 o'clock snack and then lunch at 12. And, you know, there's these constant moments. The whole point of the liturgy of the hours is, you know, clothing our, well, not, I mean, there's more points than this, but, you know, clothing our whole day in prayer and bringing us back to the life of the church, right? And so I think a lot of times, like, those things in motherhood, we always think of, oh, this is just a thing I have to do. But that's also, it's also our call to prayer. Mm-hmm. Those moments when I don't want to get up out of bed at 3 a.m, but the baby is crying. And it's like, that is my call to prayer. Like, I'm coming, Jesus.
Amen. It's a different kind of holy hour. It's a different kind of holy hour to be with.
Yeah.
And it's real. It's my favorite thing to do is to hold a baby while I pray. Like, honestly, there's something about holding a sleeping baby, especially, that's like, oh, that's how the Father wants me to be. Like, that relaxed, that at peace, that trusting to just be there, right? So how are your 3 a.m. holy hours holding a crying baby an invitation to that intimacy with the Lord? For sure. I see it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. That's a good perspective shift that I could really use.
I want my holy hour to be like on my knees in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I would love to have one of those. I haven't had one of those in a long time. But like my holy hour is also on the rocking chair, like with the baby rocking back and forth.
Yes and amen for sure. For all your married listeners, I mean, just an invitation to encourage the women in your lives who have not found a spouse. Like, do you feel called to marriage, have not found a spouse, but also the women in your lives who may be called to religious life, to allow your love to be a love that inspires and a love that heals.
Mm. Oh, I love that. I think that's probably a great place to end. Kathleen, did you want to ask anything else?
I don't think so. I really love this conversation, though. It's really given perspective. I think, you know, everything that you're talking about, sister, and how you deal with this in the religious life is just, like you said, like these vocations are much more similar than they are different. We've got 3-year-old Levi chiming in as well. but I think it's just such good perspective for us as married women, you know, and how to kind of continue to grow, continue to heal, and continue to the call to holiness in the same kind of way. It's just, it's been a very, a good conversation for me to listen in on and have. So thank you.
Yeah. Sister, was there anything else that you wanted to add?
I think that was my parting shot. Like, I just want to thank you for living your vocations well, because that inspires me. And I hope that the way that I live my vocation can inspire you as well. And there's a beautiful complementarity of that, too. It's so important for religious to have married friends and to have that perspective, just to kind of keep each other in check, right? Like, we're all on this journey together. We're on this journey of healing, of wholeness, of freedom, and of love. And because love alone will save the world, right? So the more that we can love and enter into that mystery, as painful as it is sometimes and as broken as it is sometimes, we get up and we keep trying and we keep inviting Jesus into those places and spaces so that we can be truly free and fully alive.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on, sister.
Yeah. So glad to be with you in all three of our different time zones. So good.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. If you are not already following us on Instagram, be sure to check us out at Charting Toward Intimacy. And if you listen to podcasts on a platform that gives you the option to rate or review, we'd love for you to do that because it helps us spread the word about the podcast. If you ever have questions, comments, or episode topic ideas, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can reach out on Instagram or send us an email. Our email is in the show notes. Until next time.